Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 7:08 in the Twin Cities. We are continuing to follow the situation in Southeast Florida, actually Southwest Florida as well, because the path of that hurricane, Hurricane Irma, is now actually going slightly west and is expected, the eye of the storm is actually expected to hit Tampa as opposed to Miami. Wherever it hits, this is going to be a catastrophic storm on top of the catastrophe that we have in Texas and Louisiana with the situation with Harvey. And one of the crises is obviously so many people have lost so much, but so many people have lost their animals. I know that my sister-in-law, you know, fortunately, my sister and brother-in-law were fortunate enough to live in Houston and to be on higher ground, but apparently they, one of their friends had to be rescued and lost her animal. The dog drowned. Other pets are being saved and rescued, and the homeowners don't have any homes to go back to, so these dogs and animals are being held in shelters, which means that the animals that were already in these shelters are being moved across the country so that people can adopt them. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk with Eric Ravid. He is the director of public relations for a group called Best Friends about the national effort to save these animals. But first, I thought it'd be interesting to go to actually a personal friend of mine, Ed Idaraga from Minneapolis. He and his wife, Renata, have been very active in basset hound rescues. They sadly lost one of their dogs just a short time ago. And they have actually pre-registered, which I didn't know you could do, in order to try and get one of these dogs that is coming up from either Irma or Harvey. So, Ed, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Ed, sort of tell us, and you know, I know that you've just lost, you know, one of your pets, and what made you and Renata decide to pre-register, and how did you realize you could even do that?
Well, we have been working through the Basset Rescue in Minnesota in the past years, so that is Basset Buddies Rescue, and they've recently split or grew into another group called Minnesota Bassets Rescue also. But Renata, my wife, and I have pre-registered through both the Minnesota Basset Rescue and Basset Buddies Rescue, which is Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois. And, I guess we were anxious or ready to adopt a new pet, a new dog. And we put our feelers out there and let them know we were ready.
All right. And so they actually have this pre-registration, and obviously you've done a lot of work with this group, so I think you would be obviously ideal owners. But they said, fill out these forms and say, hey, you're ready to adopt right now?
Yeah, that'll make the process a lot more faster and more efficient. And okay. They told us that they're already expecting a large number of animals coming from from Florida and from the Texas area, too.
Okay. And so how are they going to get back in touch with you, Ed? Are they going to, email you or call you when they do get a dog?
They usually call. So, we have, and when we pre-register, we sign, go through an application process online and verbally over the phone.
Okay.
So,
and this is specifically with Basset Buddies, which obviously rescues Basset Hounds, and that's a breed that you've had, for many years. So that's how you did it.
Yeah. I mean, that breed works well with our family makeup, so that's why we go with them. But I would encourage anybody to, explore whatever breed that suits their family makeup, and just to, reach out, and because there's so many animals in need, and it's just kind of heartbreaking.
Absolutely. And I know you've provided wonderful homes to other Bassets that have been rescued. So I appreciate that, because my husband David told me that you had pre-registered, and I didn't even know that was possible. And that's why I'm grateful that you came on, just to explain to people that that's even an option, and that might put you to the front of the line. And I know that my family's very good friends, another friend, their family adopted a dog from Katrina, a little rat terrier who's still going strong here. Those dogs live a long time. So, Ed,
yeah, I would encourage people to, like I said, go to the rescues of the breeds that they, are attracted to, or also just to the other rescues like Safe Paws or Second Chance Dogs, just because we know there's going to be a lot of animals needing homes.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we'll follow up with you, Ed, and thank you so much for sharing, because I think a lot of people may not even realize you can do that. Certainly, they're also looking for donations, and we're going to get to Eric Rabid here in just a minute or so. Apparently, it's $3,000 to transport a dog, and when you think about it, in terms of the fuel and getting the proper care, and so it's an expensive proposition. But certainly, a great idea for anybody who's thinking about one of these animals, and they are expecting a large number of them. So, Ed Renata, thank you so much, and we'll keep checking in with you, because we can't
thank
wait
you.
Just to hear you get a dog, and you guys are great dog owners and dog lovers. So we appreciate
thank you
telling your story this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks, Esme.
Okay, absolutely. Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
All right, folks. That is Ed from Minneapolis. He and his wife pre-registered with a group of Basset, different Basset Hound rescue organizations, so they can be first in line. They were looking for a dog after one of their beloved Bassets passed away. Joining us right now is Eric Rabid. He is the Director of Public Relations of Best Friends. Eric, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And I see that you've got a New York area code. I don't know if you're still based there.
I am. I was down in Texas, actually for the last 2 weeks. I just
went
to New York yesterday.
So, all right. Well, you just heard that gentleman, Ed from Minneapolis, talking about, and I didn't even know that was possible, to pre-register. What are some of the options for people who are considering or would like to adopt a dog from one of these areas or want to donate to the shelters? Certainly some of the top shelters here actively soliciting funds. What is your advice?
Well, I like to hear that there are breed-specific rescues that Ed was involved with, but there, as you mentioned, there are also a lot of pets that are still awaiting homes and shelters. And one of the things, and the organization that I work for is actually called Best Friends Animal Society.
Oh.
One of the things that we do is we work with a network of 2,000 shelters and rescues around the country. We try to do aggressive adoption campaigns, aggressive spay-neuter campaigns, and we're trying to keep animals from being euthanized just because there simply isn't room for them. So, if you're not looking for a specific breed, we recommend that you go to a shelter and you check out what animals are there. I happen to love mutts, the
right.
mutts myself. I find that they sort of know that they've been helped out when they've been adopted.
All right. So you were actually down in Texas. Can you explain for us, and again, it's Eric Rabid, the Director of Public Relations for Best Friends Animal Society. What was the situation there? Because I have to imagine an awful lot of people are not in a position to care for their pets right now.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, we were in the flood zones. We had two teams that were down there. One team was going into the flood zones, and they're certified through FEMA to do search and rescue. So they were in the flat bottom boats, and they were, if needed, be going into houses and helping the animals out. We had another team down there that I was part of, and they were experts in sheltering, transportation, and animal handling. And what we were doing is we were working with our network partners, because it wasn't just families that were in the way of the floods. It was a lot of shelters. So we were trying to move as many animals out of harm's way prior to flooding, or we were getting word that a shelter was flooded, and we would go down there and load up our trucks and get the animals out of there.
And then where did you take the animals?
Right now, well, there were two staging areas. One was up in Austin, all the way up in Austin, which is about 3 hours away.
Right.
And another was where I was based, was the Montgomery County Fairgrounds. And in the 2 weeks that I was there, we saw a little bit more than 1,500 dogs and cats come through the space.
Wow.
So it was pretty busy.
All right. And were these animals that obviously you could reconnect with owners once they are in a position to get back into their homes, or were some of them just without tags or without chips?
Yeah, so there were three distinct categories of animals that were there. We were co-sheltering with a Red Cross shelter on site, so we were taking care of the folks' pets that were staying at the Red Cross shelter. There were animals that I was talking about that we were getting out of shelters and moving them out of harm's way. And then there were the pets that were rescued from the floodwaters. And to your point, what we're trying to do, one of the things that we learned at Katrina, and we were down there and we saved 6,000 animals in 9 months, is that we don't want to just start shipping them around the country before we know that they're not owned animals. We want to make sure our number one priorities is to get those animals, those pets, back with their families. So we've extended the hold period. We're doing aggressive marketing in the area to make sure people know where to come find us. And we're you know, making sure that we're doing everything we can to get the animals back to their families. I mean, imagine making the devastating decision for whatever reason that you had to leave your animal behind.
And I did see images of that, of two, you know, dogs mm-hmm. sitting, you know, in a boat and the family had evacuated. I can't imagine being how heartbreaking that must have been.
Right. Exactly. So if they've lost their house, they've lost everything, we don't want them to lose a family member, too. We want to make sure that we're doing what we can to get them reunited, and that's really a primary goal.
All right. And so that's important. And is it it's got to be tough. You know, I'm not sure what percentage of dogs or cats are chipped. I suppose that's probably the most definitive way to do it. But, that's something that I didn't even really think about, that effort to reunite animals and their owners. You've got this catastrophe in Texas. It certainly looks like we've got another one, obviously, in Florida.
But potentially a lot bigger. So
right.
It's mind-numbing to think of just the people and the animals that are in harm's way right now. So we actually have a team that's going to be going down there on Tuesday, and we're going to be working with some of our local partners. We've already started setting up what are called MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, with some of the municipal shelters in order to be one of the groups that's going to be helping to gather the animals that are in harm's way and get them reunited with their families.
All right. And I looked on some websites here, some shelters here where, you know, we've gotten a number of years ago, we got a dog from that shelter, and they're all raising money. They say that it's really $3,000 per transport, which sounds incredibly expensive, which is incredibly expensive, but is it that costly when you factor in the fact the transport, you know, the hours involved in terms of, you know, the working hours for an individual such as yourself or staff?
I mean, I don't know where they calculate that number from. I know that when we work with our network partners, we work in any way possible to get the animals out, and that's all volunteer. So we were loading pets up into planes that were taking them out of the area. We were loading them up into just these tremendous RVs and other climate-controlled, really large vehicles. I've never heard a dollar figure put on it, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Right, Eric. What for people who either want to donate, and again, your organization's Best Friends Animal Society. How can they donate to you? Do you have any recommendations in terms of donations? And then if they are interested in adopting, we talked earlier with Ed from Minneapolis, who was talking about, you know, they've been involved in Basset rescues, you mm-hmm. know, for decades. That breed specific, but then you've got, as you said, the wonderful
the
mutts
shelter.
In the world.
Right.
What advice do you have in terms of both donations and then people who might be interested in adopting?
So for donations, thank you for bringing that up. You know, we had no idea what the scope was going to be when we went down to Texas. We obviously know that the scope was going to be big. Same thing with Florida. So if you go to bestfriends.org/Hurricane Harvey or bestfriends.org/Hurricane Irma, There is a fund there that goes directly to our emergency response fund, and that's going to help to go to those animals that are in harm's way for either one of those hurricanes. As far as adoption, you know, I would say keep an eye on your local shelter. I'm sure that there are going to be shelter pets that are coming up into your area, and they're going to need loving homes as well.
Right. And obviously, I know that so many people have big hearts and are doing that as well. So your team is going down on Tuesday. And just what do? Just drive down there with a truck with a lot of kennels in the back? I mean, I'm just trying to figure to see this in my mind.
No, what we're doing right now is we're finding a large staging area like the fairgrounds that we're in Texas that we can house a lot of these animals. And then just sort of gathering supplies. And the airports, I mean, you saw the news, Miami-Dade Airport was shut down yesterday or this morning. So I think flying into Florida is going to be a bit of an impossibility. So we'll get as close as we can by flight, and then we'll hop into some RVs that we'll rent, and we'll get down there so we know that we have a place to stay. We'll get to a staging area. We'll set up what we have. And then, you know, one of the great things in Texas is the public really came out in droves. We have an Amazon wish list up on our website at those two addresses that I gave you earlier, bestfriends.org/Hurricane Harvey. And folks donated so much supplies that we were able to give supplies out to shelters and rescues in the area that weren't able to get them themselves. And anybody that came in to be reunited with one of their pets, we were able to give them food and supplies to go home with.
So, the reunions, so important that that's a priority. Again, the two websites for people who want to help, bestfriends.org/Hurricane Harvey and then bestfriends.org/Hurricane Irma.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, listen, good luck to you, Eric, and we may check back here. You would love to hear how things are going a week or so. And again, I'm going to give out the website again, bestfriends.org/Hurricane Harvey, bestfriends.org/Hurricane Harvey, or bestfriends.org/Hurricane Irma. Good luck to you, okay? And we appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for helping us spread the word.
Absolutely. All right, folks. We have to take a quick break because we are going to get another live update here, but so important to help not just all the people, but also the animals and pets that are affected by these tragic storms. All right, folks, you're listening to News Radio 830 WC. All right. I just was looking at my texts, and the individual that we talked to first in that segment, Ed, he and his wife are family friends. So I called my daughter to tell them that they were going to be on, that Ed was going to be on to talk about pre-registering with the Basset Rescue. So I just got a text from my daughter. It said, "Can we get a dog from the hurricane?" We'll have to talk about that. But, it is something that I think people should be thinking. And if they are thinking of having a dog or getting a dog, I think there's going to be an influx of pets. And obviously our shelters here in the Twin Cities are full. So, My dear to my daughter, we'll talk about it. we have to talk to Dad first. But, it is so important because, you know, our shelters do such a great job here in Minnesota. They really do a wonderful, wonderful job. And they are expecting an influx in shelters around the country, you know, for dogs, you know, all kinds of dogs. And as I said, we have another family friend who got a dog from Katrina. Is a rat terrier. So that dog now, and I know it was a puppy, obviously, and we were just chatting with Jonathan that those smaller dogs do tend to live longer. But obviously, there is a tremendous need. And I really do like the fact that what Eric Ravid was talking about from Best Friends Animal Society is that, you know, the effort to reunite these poor families that have lost so much thing and the heartbreak of having to leave a dog behind or getting separated from a dog. Or a cat, it's just heartbreaking. And I think, you know, as you go through something like that, to also have that loss on top of everything else is so difficult. And obviously, if you're living in a shelter or you have to move suddenly to an apartment, you obviously can't care for the dog. So that's why these shelters in Houston and obviously throughout Florida, and if this dog is going to be, or if this Hurricane Irma is going to be as big and as bad as they say, there certainly are going to be an awful lot of pets stranded. Certainly the trajectory of this storm going in a different direction that's been predicted for days. Every prediction was that it was going to hit the east coast of Florida most severely. Now it's the west coast that is just going to get nailed by this storm. And certainly, you know, you wonder if people on the West Coast, the Tampa area, are they ready? You know, were they prepared? Did they take precautions to make sure that their pet would be okay or their pets would be okay? Anyways, so much to be concerned about. Do want to let you know that in just seconds here, we are going to take another update from CBS News to talk about the path that Irma is taking. CBS News all over this storm. And right now, folks, we're going to go to a special report. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:37 in the Twin Cities, 72 degrees. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Again, we will continue to get updates at the top and bottom of the hour on the latest on Hurricane Irma, which is expected to have a direct hit, make a direct hit on Florida. The trajectory, though, if you've been listening, going to the west a little bit. So in other words, Miami apparently will not bear the brunt of this storm as was widely expected. Tampa will actually get the brunt of this. But this half hour, I want to talk about something fun and good and delicious and just kind of cool. This is a story about two very young entrepreneurs who really have had a tremendous run with a product called Tree Fort Sodas. And I actually talked to this young woman a couple of years ago when they were starting this company. She was only 18. Her brother's a little older. But Tree Fort Sodas are basically, they've joined kind of the band of microbrewers, but this is soda. This is really good artisanal soda, and it has been tremendously successful. Eva Duckler and her brother David Duckler are joining us now. Thank you both so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, listen, Eva, I know that you were only 18, because I talked to you. You were 18.
You're my very first interview.
Oh, really? Well, that's, you know, I just was so impressed that you went to the Blake School, you had this idea, and then you kind of made a go with it. You did have, you know, a little bit of good fortune in that your family had ties here. But why don't you tell us about the story? Because I think it's so cool that somebody so young can have an idea and actually make something of it. And I do want to know, did you end up going to Wellesley?
I'm at Wellesley. I'm talking to you from my dorm room right now.
Awesome.
Actually.
Okay. All right. So, Eva, tell us about this. You're 18 years old. Uh-huh. You're a senior in high school, and you decide you want to have a soda company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So David and I, my brother, we grew up just tasting every soda we could get our hands on, basically, and it was sort of this far off dream, like that. I don't know. We'd make some amazing root beer someday. I got to high school and I started playing around with it and actually making some pretty cool soda. And I had an opportunity to spend a couple weeks sort of like putting together a business plan as if I was going to start this company. And then all of a sudden, the company just sort of started. And I was sort of along for the ride. And I've been along ever since. And it's been so wonderful. I think the community in Minneapolis and Minnesota is just so receptive and so supportive to this kind of new, good craft product beverage that it's just been... It's flown by, and it's been an incredible experience.
And David, so you're older than Eva, and you actually had some, I mean, you were actually in a business related to this. So explain how that worked.
Yes, so I got started in tea. I import tea from really, really small family farms in super, super remote China. But I also get to work on making kombucha, prohibition kombucha, and then we do some tea brewing and chai brewing. So we had a commercial kitchen going, and Eva got to go in there and use all these dozens and dozens of different spices that we were importing to do blending with. And it was just so eye-opening and inspirational to see her palate at work and get to see these spices that I'm used to using in tea suddenly becoming, you know, 1800-inspired, crazy root beers. And ginger ales and colas. So It was really, really fun to get involved in the project and inspiring for me. I'm used to my products like tea
and chai. Where is your tea houses? Because you know, people can go and get your products there.
You know, so we're primarily online. We work a lot in China. I spent about half the year over there. So we're at verdanttea.com. And then our tea is served around town at places like Black Eye Coffee, at Copland's Coffee, at the Wedge Table. So we, you know, we like to work with people in town, but mainly we're over in China. We're working with farmers and we're connecting them directly with people so they can brew in their houses. But most of my products are so complicated to explain to people. It's just so fun to get to work on soda. Everybody knows what soda is, mm-hmm. and it just makes people smile.
Well, everybody, and it's great soda. Eva, tell us, so you're 18 years old, and then you go to college, and you're running this company. I mean, Wellesley is a very, you know, it's a very prestigious school, certainly a rigorous curriculum. How have you managed to do this?
Well, David has been a superhero for me on the ground in Minneapolis.
I wish I could, like, bottle that little line there. My daughter could say to her brother, "You're a superhero." That would be my dream as a mom. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, starting a business together is like the ultimate bond. You can't get much closer than that.
No, you can't.
So that's been really wonderful and really helpful. And, you know, he manages a lot of the on-the-ground stuff, and I just sort of have to be really careful and meticulous about how I manage my time at school. So I'm also trying to live a college life, a normal college life, and be involved in activities, and then also making sure to stay on top of things.
All right, and here. What year are you at Wellesley?
I'm a junior this year, so
junior. Okay,
yeah.
And so you're just starting your junior year. You've got this company, and the sodas. I know you've got the ginger ale, the cola, the root beer, and you've got an orange, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Where can people get these Treefort sodas? Because I know that they are out there in grocery stores in the Twin Cities.
Yes. So a really great place to check out is Hy-Vee. So we're at many of the Hy-Vee locations, and they're starting to sort of pop up more and more in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
Throughout the whole Midwest. Really great store, really great people. And then, you know, we're in a variety of cafes and restaurants around town. Breweries, like you can check out Utipol's Brewery or Indeed Brewery, and they're sort of like a really good non-alcoholic option if you're the sober.
Oh, okay. So at the Utipol's, which actually is very close to where I live, off of Glenwood, and my husband's gone there. I have not gone there, but I and I'm not a big beer person, but I wanted to know, you know, well, what do they have there? So you could go to that brewery and get one of your sodas.
Right. Yeah. And actually, you know, that's one of our best markets is in breweries, just because people are there and they're having a good time and they just want to take a break from beer, or, you know, they bring their kids. And they've just been a wonderful partner to us in the community and have just really brought some great people to connect with us. So.
Okay. And what was, you know, so you got off the ground, you made some things and you marketed this, but what has been, I remember you describing me sort of the bottling process and you were hoping to get more automation. Mm-hmm. I mean, tell us through some of the key growth periods of this company. And again, we're talking to the owners and creators of Treefort Sodas. They're wonderful, great tasting sodas. What were some of the biggest hurdles? You know, because I think a lot of people out there sort of have a dream of having their own business.
Yeah. So when I talked to you last time, I was bottling by hand every single bottle and labeling and capping it with this sort of rig that David and I built with a careful plan in our garage. And it worked really well for a little bit, but it wasn't sustainable. And we really wanted to be able to sort of up our game. So we worked really, really hard on basically like making these flavors translatable from just a small batch recipe into something that we can make and actually bottle on a bottling manufacturing line. And that way, like, we can really get it to as many hands as possible. So we started doing that and have partnered with a great bottling facility and have just been able to get bottles out that way. David, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, that's been really a watershed for us, and it's great to have the consistency on flavors too. So, you know, that was the biggest challenge. And then then it's just really raising awareness. It's a tough business to get started in. It's a really competitive business, but the people have been so receptive because nobody's really doing this level of attention or care, natural ingredients, high quality, you know, real sugar, real honey to classic flavors. You see the care going into beer, you see it going into crazy mixers, but we've just been welcomed everywhere that we've gone. So it's been really great to get started and moving and having so many great partners here.
All right, we're talking to the owners and the creators of Tree Fort Sodas, which are available at Hy-Vee and other stores, also some breweries around town. Eva, what advice would you have for somebody who's thinking about doing something like this, whatever their age? I mean, because you were very young, and you did this when you were 18 years old. I mean, what and obviously you had the support of your brother and support of your parents, obviously, because if you got to use the garage, people were backing you. But any advice you have, or is there something that you would have done differently, or, you know, what would you say to somebody who's young, who's thinking about something like this? Or any age, for God's sake, you know, because there are a lot of people who maybe have this dream and just never did it when they were as young as you.
Right. I would say just go for it. I think especially as a young woman, it was really sort of intimidating to enter this like very masculine industry, which I think is true for a lot of people. But I think I was really surprised at what sort of came of asking for help as well. So I went for it as best I could, and then I fumbled and I made mistakes. And I learned most of all that lean into people who can help you. And people are excited, and when you have an idea that you're really passionate about, people want to help you. And that's really been, I think that's the biggest advice I can give, is to just don't try and do it all yourself. It's not going to happen. Let yourself ask for help. And really just give yourself, it all, like put yourself all out there. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, then you'll figure it out and it'll be okay.
Well, obviously this is, you know, such a successful enterprise, but, you know, let me ask you, can you share with us what maybe one of the quote mistakes was? Because I think in life, I think your ability to confront something, a wrong decision or a wrong turn, the way you handle that is often the key to success. Any little mistakes you want to share with us?
Yeah, sure. I think something that you have to be careful about is just really trusting who you're working with. So like I said, reaching out for help is really important and really wonderful. And also you have to remember that you're running a business, and in the business world, the main priority is people making money. And sometimes you can really like trust something or put your trust in someone, and it's like, oh, of course, like they're doing their job too. And part of doing their job might mean like making your job harder. So just sort of remembering that you're in a business world and you have to be sort of on your best game and on edge, no matter what. And like, just really do your research, I guess, when working with people or when making big decisions.
All right. And so after college, you've got two more years of college, which, you know, one of the best times in anybody's life. Do you envision coming back here to be, you know, sort of the, Tree Fort Soda guru, or are you planning a different direction, or are you going to just give it all to Superhero Brother?
Well, I love Minneapolis, and I love the work that I'm doing with the company. And so when I come home for summer break or winter break, I dive in as best I can, and then sort of am able to step back when I'm at school. I think in the long term, I love the business and it's super fun. But I'm going to school for art history.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not going to school for business, and that's not actually what I think I want to do with the rest of my life. It just so happened that I stumbled into this really cool opportunity.
But you created a business. What are they going to teach you? I mean, you know, good for you. And Boston's certainly a wonderful area to study that particular subject.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to give the sodas a plug because I think that I think your story is so cool and so neat, that, you know, it's a brother and sister, that you were such a young woman, a teenager still, you know, started this company. And I just think it's a great example. And the product, obviously, if the product wasn't good, you guys wouldn't still be around. And it's a fun product, and it does bring a smile to your face and to your taste buds. Tree Fort Sodas, folks, Eva Duckler and David Duckler, thank you so much for joining us, and continued success.
Thank you so much for having
us. Take care. All right. That's so cool. It was like her first interview. I just, when I heard this story like 3 years ago, I just thought, that is so neat. You know, here's this kid. She's 18 years old. She's a high school senior, and she does this for this project and comes up with this company. And I'm glad that she actually went through with the college and did that. That's important. And it's very cool that she's studying something different. But it is. And the sodas are really good. I mean, they really taste different than sort of the commercial type sodas that we all drink too much of. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. A lot going on. We're going to have David Schultz coming up, but let's take a quick break. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. All right, folks, it is 7:54, 72 degrees. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Do want to let you know, if you're just joining us, we are taking live updates live at the top of the hour and also at the bottom of the hour from CBS News about the latest when it comes to Irma. Hurricane Irma basically taking a northerly turn right now, headed towards Florida. The track, as we've been telling you, going further west than originally thought. The initial projection that we've had for days is that Miami would be taking the direct hit. Now it looks like Tampa and the western coast of Florida will get the most direct hit. However, this storm is so large that it's actually going to be really hitting every single major city in Florida and affecting that. And everyone is talking about this significant storm surge. So a lot to worry about there, a lot to be concerned about there. And we certainly are praying for all of those in the path of Hurricane Irma, that they will be safe, that they have heeded all these warnings to get out. Because I think right now it's probably too late in many cases, depending on where you are in the state of Florida, to get out as well. So we'll have an update on Hurricane Irma. And also coming up, we'll have David Schultz of Hamline University talk about a number of things. Want to ask him, looking forward to getting his input on this, on the ruling that came that was a big surprise. I know that he thought this would not go Governor Mark Dayton's way. Governor Mark Dayton, the Minnesota Supreme Court, basically upholding his veto of all the money for legislative salaries, saying that it was in fact constitutional, and that is the opposite of what a lower court ruled. So I'd like to get his take on that, as well as, you know, his thoughts on how President Trump is handling the crises involving both Irma and also, of course, Harvey, still a catastrophe down in the Texas area. One of the things that the president had initially sought is that he had proposed cuts to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That is no longer on the table. The president working out a deal with Democrats, actually, and some conservatives upset with the president that he worked out a deal. I don't see what other option he had. One can't leave a situation like Harvey and the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, affected there, you know, just on the table. Also, the situation with Irma affecting millions more. So keep it right here, folks. We are all over this Hurricane Irma. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.